started experimenting with alcohol when I was like young, probably like 12. That first time, it was like I couldn't have enough of it, being the life of the party too. Like I thought that's why people liked me.
What do you think was happening spiritually?
I felt like I had a personal relationship with this loving source that I called God. I felt like it was a part of me too, whatever this thing was. It felt real. And when I started drinking and using alcohol, I felt like whatever that source was, I was cutting myself off from it.
With the stuff that was looming in the background when you weren't drunk, you were aware that you were escaping that?
I was aware. Yeah, for the most part, yeah. Mm. I just felt a lot of pressure to like be this certain thing, especially like religious pressure too. I had a lot of religious pressure to get baptized. All this fear, all this anxiety. All of a sudden I found this thing that takes that all away. The ego is constantly feeding me false truths. And
so you said the ego and not the devil.
Yes, the ego.
Did you believe in the devil during this time?
No. I stopped believing in like the fear tactic of the personification of a devil, like a character. Dude, I know this sounds so corny, but like I love in Harry Potter when Dumbledore is like, the light and the darkness are in all of us. Fucking speak the truth, Dumbledore.
Mr. Youth here, welcome
What's
to
up?
Question Everything, episode 9.
Cheers.
They don't make any noise anymore.
They don't, no.
Oh. I used to do it with wine glasses. Oh yeah, we can make noise here.
There we go.
Yeah, I used to do wine glasses, but everyone was afraid of setting them down and they were all like, you know, afraid to tip over. So
yeah.
Now these match the curtains and they match me and they match the tree behind you. And
nice touch. I almost wore green today. I was this close.
Yeah, I matched a lot of my guests before this unintentionally. Yeah. Cool. So, but we got the white sock.
Yes, we do.
So for anybody listening on streaming platforms, head over to YouTube so you can see our white socks.
Yes.
That's the only reason.
Yes, that's it. Just white socks. Standard Nike socks.
Oh, I got my...
six pack, baby.
I got a six pack of Converse socks.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And those aren't the ones I'm wearing right now. But yeah. Well, we are going to touch on a subject that is heavy and has a lot of depth to it and something that we both have experience with, which is addiction. So when we first met, I had just like seen some of the stuff on your Instagram and seen the threads that run through your art, and addiction is one of those themes. And so something that I've thought about as I've recovered from addiction is the effect that addiction has on the soul, both when you're addicted to something and also what it does to you when you free yourself from that. So yeah, that's really the question, is addiction and the soul. I'm curious what your story is with that. How were you introduced to addiction? And you can be as detailed or not detailed as you want.
Yeah, how was I introduced? I mean, I guess the first thing I did was probably like, just like finding alcohol and weed. I started experimenting with alcohol when I was like young, probably like 12.
Wow.
Maybe. But it didn't become a thing until... I think like 13, I started smoking weed. Didn't really love it that much. But then when I really first got like wasted, I was like, this is fucking it.
Oh boy.
And I was like 14. So like,
okay.
14 it became like an every weekend thing.
So yeah. you were what, like a freshman
in high school? Yeah.
Jeez. Where was that at?
First like time was probably like at a friend's like bonfire.
Okay.
Like all my band guys I was in a band with.
Wow.
Friends
drunk around a bonfire at 14.
Yep. Oh yeah. And then I that first time I realized it was one of those things where I couldn't have enough of it. Mm. Like right from the first time.
Yeah.
And I just kept wanting more and more and more. Whatever this thing was that made me, it was making me feel like It made me feel great.
Yeah.
It took away, like that first time I got drunk, it was like all the fucking, like,
got to let
stress, loose. Anxiety, all that stuff that I didn't know that I had, fear. Mm. I didn't know what that was as a kid. I wasn't, like, the inner dialogue, I had no awareness of that. I was just living in that. So, like,
yeah,
all of a sudden there's this drink I can take, and it, like, took that all away. I felt good enough. I didn't feel, like, less than.
Yeah.
I never felt like I was cool. I never felt like, and it gave me all those things. Mm. And
courage in a bottle.
Courage in a bottle. And I did something I regretted, like, that first night. And it was like, but still, it wasn't enough to stop me. And, like, I mean, that kind of shows you right there. That was like my whole career, 15 years of that. And it kept getting consistently worse and worse.
Jeez.
I just had, like, you know, it was something I was running from. Like, I knew pretty, like, from that first time that I had a problem, but I did not want to address it. A, because I was having fun, and B, because everybody around me was doing it. Like, well, that's what you do.
It takes a lot of work to address it, too. So if you feel like, if the alcohol washed this anxiety and this fear away, and you realize, oh, the normal that I've been experiencing is really, like, dark and heavy, and I didn't even realize how bad it was. And this takes it away, and all I have to do is drink it.
It's worth it.
Yeah, and it's easy.
Yeah.
It's way easier than figuring out why you're afraid when you're not drunk.
Yeah, and I didn't want to deal with the fact that I couldn't stop it. Like, it was like, those one of those things, like, once I started, I couldn't stop.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was like, I would have plans, like, especially, like through high school was always a big issue with my family, because I would have every intention of just, like, having a couple just with my friends and coming back home to meet my curfew. And then all of a sudden it's like midnight, past the curfew. Mm. I can't. And it's like, that was like the early signs of, like, I couldn't, like, I really wanted to do what my parents said.
You couldn't pace yourself.
I couldn't stop. It was just like, once it was in my system, I was like, keep going. You know?
Yeah. Jeez. No, that's tough. And so with the stuff that was looming in the background when you weren't drunk, was that, you were aware that you were escaping that?
Yes, I was aware. Yeah, for the most part, yeah. I started to become aware I was escaping that. Just all the pressures, any pressure of life. Like, I didn't like school, didn't like, I had to, my parents had me get a job when I was, like, in eighth grade. My mom has, like, since, like, apologized. She's like, oh, that was too young to probably make you have to work so much. And, like, I just felt a lot of pressure to, like, be this certain thing. And especially, like, religious pressure too. I had a lot of religious pressure to get baptized, and, like, all the pressures, it seemed like, was happening around, like, being 12 and 13. And, like, I felt all this pressure, all this fear, all this anxiety. And all of a sudden I found this thing that takes that all away. That was a solution to the problem, all that stuff. So that worked for a little bit. Like, obviously there was, like, little bad things that would happen here and there, but I would try to ignore those because the drinks was working.
Yeah. It's a quick antidote.
Yeah.
How did you feel after the effects wear off?
There's always some kind of consequence, but I didn't care when I was, I mean, I cared, but I just, like, everybody was doing it. It was fun. I just thought it was what we were supposed to do. All my people, everybody that I looked up to, especially in music, it seemed like that's what they were doing. And all I wanted to do was music. I wanted to be successful in music. Mm. All that was my life. It was like music and my friends. And I thought that's what I needed to do. Like, I thought that was part of it. Like, if I wanted to be, to get to where they were, I thought I had to be like them in every way. Like, write songs, work hard, dress like them, party like them. I thought that was part of it. Like, it was an honest, like, in my head, that was, like, the right thing to do. Like,
yeah.
Literally. Like, I didn't feel like I was doing anything wrong unless my parents were like, you're doing this wrong. You're too young to drink. You know, like, all this stuff. But I'm like, I didn't really care because I was into punk rock too. So I was just like, fuck authority.
Yeah.
Fuck what anybody tells me what I want to do. Everybody was telling me I was doing everything wrong anyways. And I felt deep down I was doing everything right, because especially with music, it's like,
yeah,
you know, people are like, music can't be a real job. You need to take school seriously.
And you're like,
yeah, I'm like, although I lost respect for a lot of adults in my life, because a lot of the adults at the time, that there's very few that I felt like actually cared about what I was doing. And it's been, even like guidance counselors,
like supported you.
Supported, yeah. I remember being in guidance. I was like, told them I wanted to be in a band. And like, that's what I was going to do in my life. And they're like, well, your life's only going to go downhill. You need to like, why don't you get, you like entertainment. Why don't you get into like broadcast? Like work at the telecom, like the local news station. And I was just like, when they told me my life was going to go down from here, I was just like, fuck you. Never went back to guidance.
I wouldn't either.
Yeah, that like adults kind of all fit in that bracket for me at the time, you know?
Yeah.
But
there's a lot of stuff to this villain origin story that I relate to. I guess inner villain origin story. Like the so for me, it was the same time period. It was like I was 11, 12.
Yep.
And there was a lot of religious pressure. For me, it wasn't, I had already been baptized, but there was a lot of pressure for me to basically be ordained as a deacon in the LDS church. I even told my mom that I didn't want to, and I didn't know why. Because again, that reflection, that inner dialogue, like you said, it wasn't there really, but I just knew how I felt. And yeah, I knew that I did not feel like doing it. And it's what everyone else was doing.
Yeah. And how I felt with being baptized. I just didn't want to do it. The pressure of it.
Yeah. It's so funny too, because there's this weird thing that there's this weird attitude that a lot of religious adults have. Let's say you're a child and you don't want to go to church. They're like, you're not old enough to make that decision. Like, you get to go to church. That's what we do. It's like, if your child isn't old enough to make that decision, then flip that on its head. Your child isn't old enough to make that decision.
Yeah.
Right. So like, there's a problem here.
Yep.
That's how I felt at 12. Yeah. You know, I had all this pressure because you mentioned your life going downhill. Like, that's what was at stake for me at 12 years old, was if I'm not ordained as a deacon, my life goes downhill.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to lead to me going to hell.
Well, that's the thing too. That was the part of the pressure. Like, I'm like, if I don't get dipped in this water in front of the church, I'm going to burn in hell for eternity. Like, I couldn't wrap my head around that.
Yeah.
And I couldn't wrap my head around, like, you know, the kid that's in Japan right now that never heard of Jesus or never heard of, like, he's going to burn in hell. And then all of a sudden the new friends I'm making in high school that, you know, like gay people and like stuff, like they're really nice people. Like, what?
Yeah.
Why are they going to burn in hell? Like, all that stuff is kind of all happening at once.
Totally.
Like, you start to just, it's kind of the age where you start to just realize everything your parents told you or taught you and everything you're being taught might not be true or might not be what you agree with.
Yeah. It's a very pivotal age, because there's this threat of either following or not following what people are doing.
Yeah.
You know, you imitate for so long as a child. And then when you start to get to that like preteen age, there are little moments of intuition that come up.
Yeah.
There are little moments of your truest self trying to come out. And at each of those crossroads, you have an opportunity to listen to that or not. And so, for me, it was porn.
Yeah.
Because I was in a culture where there was no drinking around me at all. I didn't associate with anybody that was an alcoholic. I didn't know anybody that was really an alcoholic. So I was very sheltered from that. I guess a lot of religions, there's a lot of purity shaming and sexual suppression.
Oh, dude, that happened to me too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big time.
So for me, like, it was 11 or 12 years old when I was feeling all this pressure. I was getting bullied at school. I didn't know.
Do you go to Christian school or
just normal public school.
But
the bullying in middle school was at its peak, and I was suicidal. It was a lot.
Yeah.
And the first time, it's actually, I can laugh at it now. It's really stupid. The way that I was introduced to porn, I had come across it like maybe once or twice. Like, in fourth grade, I had a friend who like had this little picture that was printed out. This little picture.
It sounds like my first experience.
Yeah. And it was of a woman, like, it was fake, I think. It's very blurry in my mind. But she was, like, giving birth, basically. It was a super weird picture. And this fourth grade kid just had it, you know?
Yeah.
And he showed me that. And I just didn't even know, like, what to think of it.
Yeah.
So that was fourth grade.
And yeah, then, that's kind of around the same time where I started to get curious about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I actually remember after that having a really weird dream about like one of my teachers after that. So already just that first exposure started like messing with my mind a little bit.
Yeah.
And then seventh grade. So I was like 12. There was a kid in my class that was joking with my other teacher. She was very naive, very like sheltered. She went to cowboy church and like lived on a ranch and stuff. And she was just like a very, very interesting woman. And this kid in my class was joking with her about how there's a horse website called RedTube, which is not a horse website. I didn't get the joke necessarily, but I was laughing along with everybody else. I went home. I was home alone and I looked it up.
Yeah.
And that was the day that my life changed.
Yeah.
Because, and it was the same thing as day one, I couldn't get enough.
Yeah.
It was like, I had this feeling in my chest that was something I had never felt before. And it was intoxicating.
Yeah.
Like for a moment, all of the expectations to be this, all of the shame, all of the guilt, all of the embarrassment, all of the feeling small, all of the feeling unloved, it just went away. And I felt this twisted sense of love or something.
Yeah.
And
you're feeling something that it's a distraction too.
Totally.
Whatever takes you out of that pressure and that reality, it's just I'm leaving reality right now.
Yes.
Yeah. I get it. I mean, that's the kind of stuff I deal with. Like now that I don't use alcohol and drugs to deal with stuff, I have to be very careful about what else am I trying to fill that void with?
Yeah.
Cause drugs and alcohol worked so well for a while until it completely pretty much almost destroyed my life and like hurt a lot of people around me.
Yeah.
But I still have all those tendencies. I can still, if I don't put that energy into something else, then I'm fucked. It will manifest into other things. It will manifest into spending, eating, all kinds of shit.
Too much ice cream.
It's like that is, I can do that. You know, I fluctuate with my weight, not extremely, but like I can have like in December, I'm 10 pounds less from December. And that's just cause like, probably just because I was eating what I want. Like eating makes you feel good.
Totally.
I like to feel good. I want more of feeling good.
Yeah.
And I will just keep doing that. I have to really have lots of disciplines around everything that makes me feel good.
Yeah. Yeah. Being mindful of that is.
It's fucking, you know.
And so I'm curious, because you mentioned anxiety when you were talking about the very beginning where you felt the anxiety just wash away
from it.
So from what I understand about anxiety, cause I don't know if I ever really felt not just anxious before a track meet or anxious before a choir concert, but like just anxious for no reason.
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever really felt that until actually a year or two after I got married.
Yeah.
I've dealt with depression since around this time. It started getting really bad in middle school. So I'm curious if depression is something that you're familiar
with. Of course. Depression is a huge part of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Just that absence of feeling really anything. It's just like that emptiness.
The emptiness. What's the word that I've used to describe it? And I've heard a lot of people use to describe it.
Apathy.
It's not necessarily irritable discontent is a way to put it. Like, I don't know why I feel just not good.
Yeah.
But I don't feel good.
And I always want to it's not that. Normal.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's like if you feel that you're empty, you want to fill yourself with something.
Totally.
And you want it, you want to feel something so bad that whatever is going to fill you up the quickest and the easiest is going to be your choice.
Yeah. Amen.
So we talked about the beginning and like how it started for us and what led us to even turn to alcohol, drugs, porn, and you can name any other addiction in the book for other people listening, and it's all parallel.
Yeah.
But what's that middle process like? What's the, like now you're starting to get addicted to this thing. How is it affecting your life?
So I started to get consequences. At first it was just with my parents, just like punishing me. So I didn't really take that seriously. Cause like a lot of my friends' parents just let them get away with it. Or they'd be like, oh, if you're just drinking, like just drink here. Like, you know, everybody had those friends' parents that were like,
chill.
At least we know where chill. They are. Yeah. Yeah. Chill.
Yeah.
So I just thought my parents were like overreacting and really strict. Mm. And in some ways maybe they were, but, they were trying to figure out how to help me. They didn't, their way of dealing with it was with discipline.
Which is
not
the way to go about it for somebody who's struggling with authority.
No, but they did the best they could. That's the way that they thought they had to help me.
Yeah.
Did not work for me. I just pushed back more, or, you know, I would get my car taken away. Okay, cool.
I'll just walk.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
I would get rides with friends.
Yeah.
So I think like those didn't feel like real consequences. And even when I started to get real consequences, I remember I got a DUI when I was 19. I didn't really take it seriously.
Damn, dude.
Because like I fully bought into the rock and roll lifestyle. All my heroes were in, like, I was reading books on like rock stars, like Guns N' Roses and like all these, like I thought this shit was funny, and all my friends did too. Like I literally like me and my friend got arrested together and we were like beatboxing in the jail cell and like rapping, and they were like, yeah, I know, it's like in the holding.
Crazy.
Yeah. And they were like, we're gonna like, so they separated us, put us in two different ones, and then we were like banging on the walls making beats, and they're like, you guys, like, we're gonna like restrain you if you don't stop. Like, this isn't a game. And we were just like, we didn't care.
That's crazy.
Yeah, we were thought it was so funny. And then I remember some guy, like some crazy dude, really fucked up guy, got brought in, and they threw him in my buddy's cell with him. And he was like this dude was bleeding, like going nuts, like. It was bad. So that kind of calmed us down a bit.
Yeah, you're
like, but
like, no.
I didn't take it seriously. I mean, I had like two minor in possession of alcohols too. Like one of them was like, I was caught holding a red cup. And then one I was arrested with a friend who was driving, and I had like 12 beers in my leather jacket. Like literally I had like a pocket on the inside that was like the whole side, and I stacked, and the cops were like,
jeez.
How are you? They're like, take out everything. And I was just like, one. So you're like, how do you have that many beers?
Magician's hat, dude.
But it was all for the story. Like, it just kept fueling the whole thing, because like, there was so many other positive aspects about it. My band was playing shows. We were getting more popular. We were selling out venues. Everybody was like people would party with us after. Like, I totally lived into like being the life of the party too. Like, I thought that's, it started early too. Is I thought that's why people liked me. And that's what kind of happened when I was younger too. All of a sudden, like, I felt cool. I felt like I could talk to girls. I could talk to people. All of a sudden this stuff, I thought that's what made people like me. And I kept buying it, like kept feeding that, you know, because it seemed to be working. Like we were having a lot of fun. So like when things like that would happen, consequences would happen, I didn't really take them seriously at all.
It held more weight than the negative stuff. Because it was,
yeah,
or it was more like you were willing to continue to emphasize that and pay attention to that.
Yeah.
Because it was the good stuff coming from it.
It was so much fun. There was also like this darker side of it, but I didn't want to look at that. I did not want to look at the fact that I was like, you know, 17, drinking in my car before work, pounding alcohol at 3 p.m., pounding whiskey to go into work, like, depressed, wow. Having, you know, suicidal thoughts. Like, I didn't know where this was coming from. I didn't want to deal with it. I didn't talk to anybody about it. I didn't know what the fuck was going on
yeah.
at all. But I would hit a patch like that. Now I know it's called depression. I would hit that patch, but then I'd get out of it somehow. Something, whatever other circumstance would be happening in my life that would make me, I'd get busier or.
You'd be able to ignore it for a bit
longer. Yeah, yeah. And that there was a lot of that where like things would get really bad and then I'd get out of it and I'd be like, that kind of kept me out there. Because, at least I wasn't that bad. Like when I turned 21, I got really bad that year. I did not know. Now it was like, you're expected to. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I got really bad. So bad that I was like, my parents were just like, you can't live here and do this. So I was like, all right, cool. And I just lived out of my car for like 6 months. So I wasn't technically homeless, but I didn't have like,
yeah.
I lived out of a suitcase in my car and I would just crash it wherever the party was. Like I just like did not, that's when it got pretty rough. Like 21, 22 was like a really bad patch for me.
Jeez.
So I didn't want it to stop. I didn't want to deal with reality. I didn't want the fun to stop too. It's like, I kept wanting to keep reliving those, all the fun experiences that kept coming from it. But then, you know, flash forward to like, probably to like, you know, like the band I was in, we broke up. And then.
When was that?
I don't even know. 10 years ago now.
Okay.
So the band broke up. And they were all just as crazy as I was.
How old were you at this time?
Mid-20s.
Okay.
So they were just as crazy as I was. And I like a lot of it too was like one of the guys in the band was like into some way harder shit. I mean, I was doing blow and like all kinds. I was doing pill. I was doing everything. But he was worse at the time. So I was kind of like, well, this guy is holding this back. I need to go focus on my own shit and like start over. Like, and in that time I started to realize, oh, wait a second. Once all the like other people that were as crazy as me were out of the picture and I was trying to just be like, hang with like normal people. I'm like, oh dude, like I can't hang.
Yeah.
You know, like you can't
function without.
No, alcohol. I'm like, it kept getting like, all of a sudden it made me have to look at myself, you know? And like, it kept getting, I don't know, man. I got more into songwriting. I really started taking my career even more seriously, but then I still had this thing that I was trying to ignore that.
All like, the pain that led you to do all that in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. All the pain. I had no, and like, so like, I'm in. At this point too, it's like, that has been my coping mechanism since I was 14 years old.
It's a long time.
So I don't know any other way at this point to deal with anything other than I'm going to drink over it. I'm going to use drugs over it, or I'm going to pretend it doesn't exist. And that's really what drinking and using drugs was. It was like, it was the fact that that was my solution to being maladjusted to reality and not being able to deal with reality. And also, there's like this spiritual void I'm trying to fill, this empty void that I can't fill. Didn't know I couldn't fill it with that stuff, but there's that. And then there's the physical reaction that I get where I can't stop. Like once I start, I can't stop. Like Gabby, like my fiance, she has one and a half done. That's it. I couldn't do that. I'd have to keep, it's just, once the fire's lit,
got to keep adding fuel to it.
And I don't want to. There's something wrong with my brain. Like, I don't want to. Like, right now, like, I've been sober for almost 7 years now.
Crazy.
And I don't plan on ever drinking or using drugs again. But I know how, like, because I know if I did, like, I don't want to drink like a normal person. Like, I don't do it for the reasons, and I never really did it for the reasons, like, the social aspect of it.
Yeah.
Like, I want to burn everything down. Like, I want to fucking spend all the money in my bank account. I want to destroy my life when I'm in that headspace. Like, once that stuff's in my brain, whatever demons are unlocked, they all fucking come out. And I just want to.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting, interesting angle. Yeah, the middle part for me was, like, mirrors your situation in some ways. For me, it was, you had talked about how like you thought that was why people liked you. You were cool because you were like drinking doing drugs. And for me, nobody knew that I was addicted to porn.
Yeah.
And especially with the religious environment that I was still in, I could not talk about that. I did talk to my dad about it once because he was my bishop at the time. And I had to. It was the only time I confessed during the whole 10 years that I was addicted. And it was hard because I think I told my dad, and the thing about the LDS church is if you're a young man with the priesthood, and I put that in quotations on purpose, and you pass the sacrament every week, only if you're worthy, though, if you have to go confess about something like this. I mean, you kiss a girl and you're going to have to go confess and you've committed a sexual sin. And so there was that. But obviously, porn, masturbation, all that stuff is like worse. So
yeah.
What happens is you have to sit out for a couple weeks. You can't take the sacrament or pass it. And what is taught is that they do that so that you can really ponder about the sin that you've committed and so that you can not take the atonement of Christ for granted. I personally believe the real reason is it is a very clear way to keep people in line and you socially shame them.
Yeah, because everyone looks at, oh, what did he do?
They know. They yeah, all know you did something like yeah. that.
What did he do?
If you're up yeah. every single week passing the sacrament and then 1 week for some reason you're sitting yeah. down and then you don't, like, people have nothing better to do than observe that, especially yeah. because during the sacrament, everyone's quiet. Nothing's going on. The only movement in the room is you passing the trays around. So I confessed to my dad, who was the bishop. I really confessed to the bishop. Like, I wasn't confessing to my dad. And I sat out for 2 or 3 weeks. And the entire time I was sitting there, I felt even more alone and isolated.
Yeah.
And the guilt and the shame. Like, what people don't realize about addiction is that whenever you are met with discipline, they're like, humans don't like to be disciplined. We like to please other people. We like to make our superiors proud, especially when it's our parents. And so when you feel this guilt and shame, it fuels the addiction.
Oh yeah.
Because it adds to the layer of shit that you feel that is heavy and difficult to deal with. And because you're not equipped with a proper, you said outlet, right? Now where you're at in your life, you need to be very intentional with where you put your energy and your focus so you can use it as an outlet. And I'm the same way. You don't have that outlet at the time. And you're not using anything like that. The addiction is your outlet.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just made it worse.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what for years and still is happening with like just society's approach to addiction in general. I think there's one side of it that is getting better. There's so many people pushing treatment as like that's the solution. People need help. But for a while,
even psychedelics too. There's a lot of research with ketamine, psilocybin that is very promising for things like addiction and depression and PTSD.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that stuff unfortunately doesn't work for me. Once
totally fair.
Put that stuff in my system, I know where it's like.
Yeah.
I want the other thing too.
Yeah, I get
that. If it works for you, that's fucking great. But like, we need to help those people. Addiction is not a crime. That's the thing. People used to treat it as a crime and still do. Like,
especially in religious settings.
Yeah, it's not a crime. It's a sickness. And we should be helping our sick. We should be helping our weak.
Yeah.
Not like throwing them in jail.
Yeah.
You know, or just stacking up, like, just once you're in the system too, it's just like, it's so hard for people, especially if you're caught in it. Like, you can't get out, you know?
Yeah, and I think,
you know,
in a religious setting too, that because it is, you are sick, right? You're ill. And
I mean, addiction is a mental illness. It's a spiritual illness and a mental illness.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. I think when you're in that place where you like sickness is associated with sin in a way where like if somebody is sick, they don't have the spirit with them or whatever, then it's this situation where, yeah, like they say, oh, we want to help you. But it's like, no, you're looking down on me like I'm a sinner.
Yeah.
And so I totally agree. It's funny too, because for me, and I'm curious if there was any sort of parallel for you, the LDS Church does have an addiction recovery program. I'm 12 years old.
Yeah.
13 years old. Like,
yeah.
And I've already been shamed publicly.
Yeah.
Silently, but publicly shamed.
Yeah.
And for a couple weeks now, and you want me to go to an addiction recovery class? That makes it real.
Yeah.
That I have to admit to myself that I'm addicted. I didn't tell my dad I was addicted to porn. I just told him that I had watched it. I didn't want to admit to myself I was addicted.
Yeah, of course not.
So I'm curious if there was, like, as part of the discipline that your parents tried to, I guess, impose.
Yeah.
Was there, you had mentioned counseling or something at the beginning.
Well, did I?
Or, yeah, you had mentioned when you were, like, talking to, not a therapist, but, like, some sort of counselor, and they were like, hey, your life isn't going to.
Oh, my guidance counselor.
Guidance counselor.
That's just someone in school. But, okay. Well, no, therapy or counseling wasn't, I think my parents had brought it up and I just turned it down.
Yeah.
They didn't, because I didn't want to do, why would I want to go see a therapist?
I mean, like, do you have a problem?
Yeah.
I don't have a problem.
Exactly. I didn't have a problem. I didn't want to address that I had a problem. I didn't know that I had a problem because it seemed normal. I was like, the problem was when I wasn't drinking. Like, the problem is everybody else trying to stop me from drinking. Like, if people just let me do what I wanted to do, I was fine. Mm. In my head, so I thought. But yeah, the discipline definitely obviously didn't work. It just made me feel more alienated and more alone. And I retreated more into that world. Because it was treated as if I was doing it on purpose. Like, if I was like, I have a choice today because I have awareness of what's going on. And I've done a lot of work to, like, overcome slash, like, I'm in recovery. I battle, like, this is something I work on every day, every single day.
I'm with you.
And now that I know what it is, now that I can say what it is, I can work towards the solution. I had no idea what the fuck was going on.
Yeah.
But I'm always treated like I'm doing something wrong. Like, you're like I had a sickness. A sickness cannot be treated with, like, punishment. And the thing is, like, my parents didn't know. They didn't understand addiction. I didn't.
Yeah.
They didn't.
Yeah, totally.
I think, you know, this is in the however many years since I've been in high school, I think we've gotten a lot more, like, the stigma around addiction is not nearly as bad as it was. Addiction was such a bad, dirty, dirty thing.
Yeah.
Where it's like a weak thing. Where I've learned, no, like, it's that's something I can't control, that I'm an addict or an alcoholic. I can get help. Yeah. I have control over that. I can seek a solution.
Totally.
You know, but that thing that's in me, trust me, I don't want it to be there. Why is it there? You know, I didn't want it to. I didn't want to accept I was an alcoholic or an addict at all. You know.
Because that adds to the pain. It's that sting and, like.
Well, it's because the stigma too.
Yeah.
Because I believed the stigma that being an addict, being an alcoholic, or being whatever is it's dirty.
You're a bad person.
And you're a bad person because of it. It's like, no, man, I have this thing. I have this mental illness, spiritual sickness, a disease that, like, I'm getting help for, and I can help other people too. Like, there's a solution for that for me today.
Totally.
You know,
a getting outside of yourself is a huge component to actually recovering.
Oh yeah.
And it's similar to depression, at least for me, in the way that, like, my depression doesn't ever go away. I've just learned to manage it a lot better.
Yeah.
And I'm still open to experimenting with ways to help myself unlock the full spectrum of emotions again.
Yeah.
And I think that I am. I feel that my peaks and valleys, if you will, are deepening, and it's nice.
Yeah,
I've cried a little bit more frequently the past year than I have the 10 years prior, you know. But getting outside of yourself and realizing, you know what, first of all, you have to admit there's the addiction, and then you have to realize that you're not alone. You have to acknowledge that you're not a bad person, and there's other people struggling with this. Are you strong enough to rise above it so that they can see that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's like, first you got to help yourself.
Totally.
And then once you help yourself, it's like, I feel like talking about it is one way that I feel like helps other people. Sharing, just being open about, hey, because like, yeah, I was in the dark. I kept this thing in the dark. I thought I did. Other people could see it.
Yeah.
Every girl I'd ever dated, do you think you have a problem with drinking, or you have a problem with drinking? You know, it's like,
whichever approach.
Yeah. unfortunately, the message didn't really sink in, because a lot of the girls I dated were also like, you know, you are what you attract. Like, I attracted other people that were also kind of lost and seeking solutions in the wrong thing, seeking to feel okay. It's like, you know, at the end of the day, I just want to feel okay. That's it. Like, it wasn't a malicious thing.
Yeah. You weren't trying to hurt anybody else or ruin your life.
No, that's the last thing I want. I just want to be okay, feel okay with reality, with myself and the world around me.
Yeah. You've mentioned a couple times, you know, there's a sickness in the soul as well. And that is the more existential part of this whole concept, or this whole conversation around addiction, is what impact it has on your soul while you're addicted and then when you recover. So I'm curious, it doesn't have to be through a religious lens, but just spiritually, what do you think, looking back, was happening spiritually when you were just starting this addiction, or maybe even before? Like, what has that looked like for you? What do you think was going on?
So when I was young, I felt like I had a relationship with God. You know, I say God for lack of a better term now. I don't know what.
Sure.
I felt like I had a personal relationship with this loving source that I called God. Being raised in the church, I pictured it being a person at the time. I pictured it being Jesus, or I don't know. It was
a man in a white robe.
Yeah, yeah, whatever that was, I felt a personal connection. I felt a love. I felt like it was like something I could talk to every night. I felt like it was a part of me too, whatever this thing was. It felt real. And when I started drinking and using alcohol, I felt like whatever that source was, I was cutting myself off from it. I felt myself killing off whatever that like light was that I could tap into and I could go to. Cause like, it really was a solution for me a lot. Like, I prayed a lot as a kid, and like almost, like every night, like despite like all the other things that I was told about what God was, like I felt like I had this knowing in me personally that I could tap into. And I felt like I was killing that and running from that. Cause I felt like deep down, one of the things, like a protruding thought that I never would let fully enter my brain, was like, this might not be the answer. This might not be. And because I was really treating it like it was the answer. It was making like,
you're lying to yourself pretty much every time you indulge in it.
Totally. And then I think when I finally got sober and I finally got help and I got into recovery and I started to do a program in recovery. I started to, you know, one of the things I was taught was to pray. And I really loved the way the program I was in was, because it wasn't it wasn't like, this is God. Like, you could pray whatever you want.
It's kind of like AA.
Yeah.
I had a friend go through AA, and I went to, I think, two meetings with him just to support him.
Yeah.
And
that's exactly what it's like. I mean, I'm in AA.
So
I was in NA too. I kind of bounced around. Okay. I've been to like, there's like a Buddhist one too.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. It's like, but it's all based around the same spiritual principles that have been around for thousands and thousands of years. This isn't new stuff. But what really helped me in the beginning when I was getting into this thing was that I could choose the God that I wanted, as long as it wasn't me. So I just had to find something outside of my
phone. Or the alcohol.
That's a thing. Because they were like, okay, sure. Like, you say you don't believe in God, but like, kind of like laid out what a concept of God can be for people. And alcohol was my God. Drugs, that's what I was turning to. I had to turn to something else now. I had to put my faith and put my energy into something else that wasn't this thing that I was making out to be God. And
yeah,
when I finally got like a little bit of like time and I was like clear headed, because you know, it's like a lot of it too is like there's so much chemicals and all that shit in your system.
All the dopamine, man.
Yeah. Like once I feel like my dopamine receptors and stuff started to level out, I don't know. I felt like I was starting to get connected back to that thing that I was connected to when I was a little kid.
Interesting.
And I'm still seeking that. And when I'm seeking that on a daily basis, like I have a better day than when I'm not, when I'm just like totally trying to control everything and totally just like I need to carve out that space to try to connect with that source for myself to stay in a good headspace and to be like, cause I feel like that's what was missing for me. I was trying to fill this void with something of this earth, alcohol, drugs, whatever. And now same thing. Like I try to fill the void with the easy things, material things.
Yeah.
And if I realize that void can't be filled. Like I cannot fill that void with things of this world. Success.
Yeah. Man-made stuff.
Man-made stuff. Or mind-made stuff.
Mm.
Success. Mm. Approval of others, whatever it is. Like yeah. That's not true peace for me.
Yeah, you mentioned reframing this idea of God. A lot of people have a very concrete perspective of God,
yeah,
a concrete image of God in their mind. And yeah, you can make anything your God. You know, the Bible says don't worship false idols.
Yeah.
And the God of the Bible is presented in a very specific way. And so people take that as, oh, like worship the God of the Bible. But the principle remains the same, mm-hmm. which is that there are things that you could dive as deep into as you possibly want, and you're not going to find any sort of peace. So, yeah, for me, like, if you see God as source, and I think we're both on a path now where we see God as the source of love.
Mm-hmm.
God is the source of creation.
Yeah.
And when you make your addiction the thing that you are turning to free you, from yes. the negativity that you feel, from the sorrow.
And the disconnection.
Totally.
You know, addiction, I feel like the opposite of connection is addiction.
Hmm.
It's something that I've heard a lot, and I like that because it makes sense. Like when you're trying to connect to, like you're trying to connect to this thing and it's not working. That's what addiction is. It keeps you disconnected from reality, from everything, from yourself.
Yeah, and you disconnect from the source.
Yeah, exactly.
And you connect into that thing that you're idolizing.
Yeah.
For me, that was porn.
Yeah.
And something that I wanted to mention just about like the middle of the road for me was the addiction itself was the silent, quiet part, right? I'm not going to, like, if I watch porn and then go hang out with a friend or even go to, you know, I see my family or whatever, I'm not walking in drunk, you know, like you would never know.
Yeah.
There is maybe a change in energy. I won't say maybe. There's totally a change in energy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only until I started becoming aware and like intentionally tracking like how I felt before and after that I realized like, okay, this is literally a negative thing that's impacting my life. Mm-hmm. But like porn's an interesting one. And I think the rise of the knowledge of AA is helping with things like alcohol addiction because people know that it's a thing. And like people know that everyone drinks and that anyone could be an alcoholic. Porn is still a very taboo thing.
Yeah.
And it's also free and instantly accessible at any time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a super dangerous drug.
Yeah. They have 12-step programs for that now too, for everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's accounts like Fight the New Drug, which are doing a lot of work in that. So, yeah, the external thing for me was actually when I had a girlfriend that very soon after this, after I started like getting addicted, I had a girlfriend that I thought I was going to be with for the rest of my life, as naive as that is at 14.
I thought the same thing about my 15-year-old girlfriend.
Yeah. she was a year older than me. We went to two different schools. She was my best friend. And I really like had a solid idea of our future together. She cheated on me. Now, her and I never did anything sexual together. Like, yeah. we kind of made out like maybe twice. It's nothing crazy. And she like cheated on me, actually had sex with this guy that she went to school with. She apologized after a while of like stringing me along, and then I took her back and she did it again. And I'm still deconstructing that whole experience, because it has affected me to this day. Like, when you're 15 and it's your first love and they do something that fucked up, like, it really, it sinks deep.
Yeah.
And it grows roots. And so for me, at this time where my brain is starting to get like hypersexualized, and I'm just locked into this addiction that is the only thing that makes me feel good. Yeah. Besides this girl that I was dating at the time, like I felt genuine love, I would say, for her. And I thought that she loved me. Maybe she did. I don't know. She was just 15, 16. But like, when that happened, when she cheated on me, in the coming months, I started going, okay, she left me because I wasn't having sex with her. I wasn't doing sexual stuff with her, and I wasn't enough for her. And that pushed me over the edge.
Yeah.
That's when this, like, this thing that I was turning to, that I just wasn't aware of it. This is when it got bad, because I then, from then on, as I started getting into relationships with other girls, like, I was still a very emotional kid. I still felt a lot of things very deeply. I still cared very deeply for people. But now there's this weird twisted part to it where I felt like I couldn't be loved. I felt like I was unlovable unless I did sexual stuff. And that started getting me into trouble. That's the external stuff that actually started physically getting me into trouble with church stuff. And yeah, that was a thing that lasted through my relationships, even up until I got married. It was one of those things that was so deeply rooted for so long, where I'm still now to this day learning how to speak to myself, learning how to remind myself, learning how to just be mindful that when I'm lovable without sex, and I can love without sex.
Yeah.
And like,
I've experienced similar feelings, because I mean the shame that comes from, a lot of times people are raised in the church, there's just so much shame, and I feel like that's something I've had to like really just continue to work through, and it hasn't left me. I feel shame around sex because of how I was raised. And I can feel shame. It's not like, you know, I'm with a loving partner now, and I feel comfortable and okay and loved.
Totally.
But same. There's just things in my head that, and just things over the years that have resulted from that. I think for so many people, in recovery I've met too, that are addicts and alcoholics, it's like, they were raised in that shame. It's so hard to break that too. It takes a lifetime sometimes, or maybe we don't. It's just one of the things we carry around
forever.
Yeah.
Forever. Hopefully not actually forever, but
yeah. The good thing is now though, I know it's like, I know that these things are lies. They're still in my head, but I know that that's not me. I know that my brain can tell me lies. I'm constantly feeding my, whatever that is, the ego is constantly feeding me false truths. And
so you said the ego and not the devil.
Yes, the ego.
Which I agree with.
Yeah.
Did you believe in the devil during this time? When you were like an alcoholic, when you were just like in the thick of it.
In the thick of it?
Did you believe in the devil?
No, because I mean, I think when I was little I did, but then I just stopped. Once I kind of like the, what I said before about like burning in hell, because I don't get dipped in a thing of water, was just like, I was just like, yeah. Yo, dude. And I'm listening to punk rock at the time. I'm learning my mind is open to different things.
Yeah.
It's not to say I didn't believe in a God, but I just stopped believing in like the fear tactic of.
Interesting.
Of the personification of a devil, like a character, I think. I don't know. I just stopped believing in that.
That's interesting. I mentioned on my story just yesterday, I don't know if I ever did believe in the devil, but yeah. I was definitely in an environment where that belief was very present. Yeah. And I can't say, although I can't say that I fully ever believed in a devil, I was definitely affected by the concept.
Yeah. And, you know, same. Oh, same too. I was afraid.
Yeah.
I did not want to burn in hell for eternity.
Yeah. And I didn't want to be evil. Just going back to the whole sin thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not trying to be bad. There's an absence of love here.
Yeah.
And I just want to feel that.
Yes.
And there's all of these weird things that can be presented to you that they are pretending to be that love. But I think that the possibility of a devil kept me addicted, interestingly enough. You would think that, so for somebody maybe a little naturally rebellious like us, you would think that if there's this character of the devil presented, that you would just be like, what? Like, whatever. And you wouldn't be afraid to do whatever you want to do. Because it's like, he's not going to hurt me. He doesn't even exist, whatever. But for me, believing in the devil kept me addicted because I was disempowering myself. There was this external thing that was always trying to get me. Every time I watched porn, it was the devil trying to pull me away.
Yeah.
And so I had this thought, but then it felt so good that it's like, well, whatever, like.
Yeah, it helps. It made you not accountable.
And that's exactly as hot of a take as this is. I think that's on the flip side also what the atonement of Christ does for people mentally is believing in a savior and a devil totally drops all accountability. This idea that you are such a horrible, sinful, naturally evil person already. There is an evil demon that's always trying to tell you lies and drag you down. And there's somebody here. It's a giant guilt trip, basically. This perfect person died in the most gruesome way for a piece of shit like you. And if you go to church every Sunday, then you can be forgiven of that. Like, where's the accountability?
Yeah.
So you bringing up the ego is huge, because when you realize that it's your fault that the position that you're in right now, the reason that you're addicted and the reason why you feel so bad is your fault.
Yeah, you were lost. You were doing the wrong things. You're trying to fill the void with the wrong things.
Yeah, and just to clarify, bad things that happen to you aren't your fault. So I'm not saying that if you're a victim of something, right? Let's say you're a victim of some sort of abuse. And then you're a child. You don't know how to cope with that.
Totally.
You don't know how to heal from that. It's buried deep. It sits there. Now you're susceptible to addiction, right? As an example, what happened to you is not your fault.
Totally.
But when you get to a point where you do start asking questions about your situation.
Yeah.
And when you get to a point where you're becoming conscious that you're lying to yourself, that this thing is somehow helping you, then by continuing, it's your fault. There's no devil. Like my mom told me growing up that the devil works hardest on people that have the potential to do the most good.
I haven't heard that before.
That's a very intoxicating thought.
Yeah.
Because it's, you brought up ego, which sparked this whole train of thought anyway. Like, oh, wow, that's why I sin so much. That's why I struggle so much with sin. Because
I'm so good.
Yeah. Right. And it does this weird thing. And
yeah,
all love to my mom, because I think that in a way she was right in seeing that I have potential to do good. We all do.
Yeah.
But she knows that I'm ambitious. She knows that I care about people. She knows I have a good heart. And I think that she was trying to be comforting, but that thought was a virus.
Yeah.
That spread in my brain, because it was times where I knew when I was about to watch porn, like I got to the point where I knew that this was going to make me feel like shit. I knew that this was going to make it worse. I knew that I shouldn't be doing this. I knew that this was taking me away from a better life. But I felt so disempowered, because I thought I don't stand a chance against the father of lies.
Yeah.
Like, what chance do I have of facing this? And it wasn't until I dropped this belief that there was someone here to save me, and that there was someone here trying to damn me.
Yeah.
And I turned inward and I became aware of the ego.
Yeah.
And that's when it was like, wait, I do have control over this.
Yeah. I mean, heaven and hell, and my understanding of it, it's hell is here, like in my head.
Yeah.
And in this world, this is hell. And it is also heaven. It's everything is how I perceive it. And like my perspective of it.
Yeah. You create heaven and hell in each moment. Yeah. The choice you make.
100%. You know, it's like 100%. Glass half empty, glass half full.
Mine's a little bit less than that.
I've got more heaven in mine.
There, yeah. Welcome to hell.
But,
oh, seriously, welcome to hell. I'm about to cough so much.
Oh, shit. Here he goes.
Woo. The devil was trying to kill me just now.
He was.
He was like, stop spitting bars, you bastard.
He was, man. Yeah, I think that, dude, I know this sounds so corny, but like, I love in Harry Potter when Dumbledore is like, the light and the darkness are in all of us. It's in all of us. I'm like, fucking speak the truth, Dumbledore. Like, that's it.
What's up?
It's it. That's it right there. That's it's in all of us. It's
and like, that doesn't mean that we are evil.
No, it's part of being a human.
Yeah.
It's all in there. We just have, for whatever, like a lot of it is like, for me, I call it like my training now. Like I had to learn so much about myself and all of my relationships to everything in my life to be able to like gain some awareness and get on the other side of that and see that a lot of it was me all along. Like we were talking about abuse. Towards the end of my drinking and my addiction, I really became a victim in my mind to everything that ever happened to me. And that was not me before. Like that was like the, all of a sudden becoming this victim in my head is what turned me. That was the end, the beginning of the end. That's where it's like everything started to become, the light was just getting less and less and less. And like, I was sad and hopeless and like
angry
and just full of fear. And just like, there was no way out, and it just kept getting worse and worse. And it was a daily thing. Yeah. And it was just so dark. Because I became a victim, and I just, oh, this happened to me. All this stuff happened to me, all this stuff. And like a lot of, you know, so I drank over it and I used over it. And like later on, like in sobriety, doing some work on the stuff, I realized like, yeah, like, oh, like abuse is not okay. It's not my fault, but I do have a part in how I react to it now.
That's the choice you have.
And there's a part to me, and it doesn't make it right or wrong. It's just, that's what I have to see the truth about myself and how I turn to these things. Totally. Like, it doesn't make it right or wrong that I chose alcohol to feel like that was not a, like, yes, in my brain now, that was the wrong decision. But as a kid, there was no, it was no, there's not really a right and wrong. It's like, I chose that path and it led me to more darkness and pain.
Yeah.
And then if I choose this path, it leads me to more happiness and peace on a daily basis. And I could do that right now if I want.
Yeah.
You know?
A lot of people would ask, because I think a lot of times religious people operate, and, you know, to be totally fair, I think most people, regardless of religion, operate in the bounds of duality. It's this or that.
Yes.
It's good or evil, right? You either know the truth or you don't, right? And
yes.
It's not that simple. And
it's
so
not. It's not.
If you're not a religious person, I mean, they're going to ask, well, how do you know which path goes where, right? Because they see you're either sinning and you're walking away from Christ or you're not, right? And so I see it. I'm starting to have this image in my mind of God, the source of love, creativity, whatever, as the center, and then as a kind of a circle or even a sphere, whatever you want, the further away from that you get, that's where you see evil, right? It's the further away you get from the source of creativity and love
100%.
And truth. So like, if it's not just this one path or the other, if it's omnidirectional, how do you find that path as somebody who's currently addicted to something or who is working on recovery or who is recovered? How do you find that? How do you connect and plug back into that source?
For me, I just stopped trying to figure it out. I realized that I'm a human being. God is unfathomable to me. There's so much on the other side that I won't know till I get there, right?
If you get there.
If I get there.
Yeah.
I have no fucking idea.
Yeah.
And neither does anybody.
Agreed.
You know, it's so for me, the best place to be is there. And I can, doesn't mean I can't continue to seek and maybe broaden my perception of what I think God, the source, the universe might be.
Yeah.
I know that when I seek that, I feel peace. But I know that when I seek to say, I know what this is now, and this is what it is, and everybody else is wrong. Like, because when I start to think I'm right, that means everybody else is, that puts other people in a position to be wrong. I'm better off if I just stay, I don't know. I'm going to seek and like learn. A lot of like, you know, I like to learn. I like to learn, especially about the religion that I was raised in. I just like to learn about it. I like to see where, like, what happened, how it shaped my mind, why my mind is the way it is today. But for me, when I just, if I can just, like, I don't know, religion isn't necessarily a bad thing, because I feel like we're all talking about the same thing, the source. Mm. And like, but I just don't believe in the duality of it. I don't believe in it's this or that. I believe that all ways can lead to the source. Every religion is so similar.
Yeah.
Everybody like knocks on all the differences, but they're so similar. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's like religion can be a way to lead you closer to the source when you use it the right way. When you actually listen to what Jesus was actually saying. All his friends said afterwards, and when human beings turned into religion.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I agree. Like I know that there's a lot of things that I say where it seems like I'm dogging on religion, as in like I think that religion is just
no bad. I don't think you think that, for sure.
Well, that's good. And I think like the point of religion should be to help you become a more spiritual person and help equip you with the tools to seek that source.
Totally.
But unfortunately, things are taken so literally, and there is an us versus them mentality.
Yeah.
And that certain people early on in religions start to put up because of the ego, because you want to be right. And mm-hmm. if you're right, then they're wrong.
Yeah.
And it very quickly spirals out of control.
Well, and that's the thing, it's control. People feel in control when they think that they're right.
Yep.
If they don't have an answer, you're less in control, which is fear. Like, you're more afraid.
Yeah.
Religion, it can be an anecdote to fear. People, that's totally why people turn to it so much, is because it makes you feel less afraid. It gives you some security.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, for a person, to get back to your original question, like, I don't know how I'm sober today. I just know that I know what I do, but I don't know why the light bulb went off when it did, why I stayed out for so long, why I did all those things. Like, all I know is that, like, by living by spiritual principles, whether I fucking believe in them or not, if I do these certain things, like praying and meditating and like practicing acceptance and leading with love and things like that, my life is better. So I'm going to keep doing those things. Whether I believe in, no matter what my conception of God is, it doesn't matter. You know,
it doesn't mean that if you're wrong, God isn't there.
No. But also I feel like, okay, say, what if Christians are right? Like, what if they're right? Like, what if, like, I don't believe that a God could be, like, I'm a human. Like, say I got lost and didn't, like, I feel like God would look at it as, oh, he just didn't understand. Like, or miss, you know, whatever. Like, I don't know. I don't, that just.
Yeah, God knows your heart, right? I mean, yes. If Christians are right, like, the something they talk about all the time is God knows your heart. And a lot of actions seem to point in the opposite direction, yeah, of them actually believing that. But, like,
totally.
My goal is to do good.
Yeah.
And I know that good is, well, what is that? Oh, yeah. What are you going to base the morality of that on? Yeah. But, like, what I want to do is help. I want to aid in the collective growth of humanity.
Yeah.
I think that's in our nature, above all else, is to grow.
Yeah.
And I want to surround myself with people that have a similar goal.
Totally.
And if we are looking at that collective growth through slightly different lenses, that's okay. If they're totally different lenses and there's...
it's hard to have a conversation.
Exactly. And we can have a conversation even, but that doesn't mean I have to spend all my time with you.
Totally.
But yeah, I mean, that, without going off the rails too much, if somebody's watching this who is currently struggling with addiction, what advice would you give them? Because I think there's a lot of things they could take from this episode at large, but if you could just break it down simply, be like, look, if you actually want to be free of this addiction, not only physically, but if you want to free your soul, here's what I suggest.
I suggest that you, well, A, like, all I have is my experience and what worked for me. And I know there's so many different ways that work for different people.
Sure.
And so all I have is my experience. And that's all I can really share. And I got help. Like, when I was, like, at my lowest, I thought of the one person, like, there's always been, we all know people that are sober or clean, or even if we don't, it's, look it up, Google it, go on Instagram, find an account, DM them, DM me. Like, seriously, if anybody out there is struggling, ask me, I'll get you plugged in with somebody that could help you. Like, yeah, this community is, like, nationwide, worldwide, there's so much that is happening in recovery behind the scenes right now to try to help people.
Yeah.
That, like, isn't, like, it's there if you seek it, but you have to seek it. You have to really want to get help. It doesn't work if you're not all in. It will not work because it's up to you.
Yeah, that's something I heard too, man, just recently, is somebody said, if you're looking to really conquer addiction, the reason why you haven't yet is because you have been hovering at the 99% line.
Yeah.
Like, you've acknowledged that it's bad for you. You've acknowledged that you want to stop. You've even tried to stop, but you're hanging on to the 1% opportunity that you will take when you feel like you have to.
Yeah. I always felt like when I had a kid, I would have to stop. I don't have a kid. I didn't make it that far.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
yeah,
you know,
Yeah. And also like on the other side of that, you're holding onto this 1% of like, okay, I'm done. But then when you feel just bad enough about yourself, whenever you're feeling just low enough, or whenever there's something just intriguing enough, right? A new drink to try, or a new whatever to watch.
Yeah, like, yeah.
You have to let go of that 1%, and you have to be willing to literally be done.
Yeah. And I didn't do it alone. That's a big thing. That's what I'm saying for get help. It's like, I had to surround myself. I had to be taught how to do it. Like, nothing changes if nothing changes. And if I keep doing the same thing over and over again, and it's not working, I need to seek a new solution.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I had to be taught that. I had to listen to other people, even when I thought they were wrong, because I looked at the people where I wanted what they had, right? It's like, I wanted to be sober. These people had years, even like days, and I didn't have days.
No.
Their lives looked like they were together. They were happy. They looked like they were happy. They were I looked at that. And even if I didn't believe in what they were telling me to do to get to where they were, I saw they were there. So I just trusted the process. And that's what you have to do. It's like, when you get help, when you are in a position where you're finally ready to reach out, like, just give it a shot. Like, give everything a real shot. Any suggestion that, you know, like, any suggestion in recovery that is given to you, I feel like, I mean, I don't know, maybe not any suggestion. I don't know what kind of weird people are saying what.
Trust your gut.
Trust
right?
your gut.
Your gut's telling you that this addiction is bad for you and that it's hurting you.
Yes.
And if you're at a point where you're ready to stop ignoring that, allow it to lead you to the truth.
Totally. 100%. I mean, even like rehabs are a good way to start if you don't, you know anybody that's sober. But I think talk to somebody you know that is sober and find out how they did it. That's how I did it. That's it. I asked for help. I reached out my hand. People were there to pull me out.
Yeah.
And I was finally willing enough to listen. And that's why the only reason I think it worked for me is I was like willing and desperate. Because I knew it was not fucking working. And I finally had that moment of clarity of like, okay, which I'd have that moment here and there. Like, I'd have that, like, before I finally stopped, like, I'd get that clarity. Maybe I'd get, you know, sober up for 30 days, 2 weeks, 4 months. I lasted once, but something would always pull me back out.
That was the 99% that you were like, you were so close to.
Yeah. I was almost there and I couldn't. You know, that's why it's so hard for me now that I'm like to watch people I love that are still struggling in this thing. It's just so tough because some people will ask me for help and I'll tell them what to do and they just won't do it.
Yeah.
Because they're not ready. And I have to remember that, you know, I have to still like, I still want to be a person that they can like, I don't judge them because what the fuck's the point? But that was me.
Yeah.
I'm just a little farther along. Like, I did not have this knowledge on my own. Like, Eric's best version of living life was left me like in a fucking ditch, dude. Yeah. That was the best I could do. I needed someone to teach me how to do and people to teach me.
Yeah.
And like, even those people, they went through the same thing I went through. It's really just the message and the principles I have to learn how to live by and discipline.
Yeah. I agree with all that. I think getting help, and if it doesn't look like a structured program, like, you have to tell somebody about it.
Talk about it. Yes. Start talking about it. You know, it'll when you start putting it out there and start recognizing that, first it starts addressing it within. And when you put it out there, help will find you. If you can't find it, it'll like, you just got to start putting it out there.
Yeah. And there are certain addictions that are way more accepted by society. And there are some things that are even touted as not even being a bad thing in general. So how can you be addicted to it?
Totally.
So like, I think that is a similar struggle with alcohol and porn is, although the accessibility is different, everyone goes out and drinks on the weekend.
Oh yeah.
And most people watch porn, even if it's not like all the time, most people watch it every once in a while. So totally. Like, you have to, first of all, be aware that whatever your addiction is, it's not like, no addiction is too embarrassing to come out about. Like, you have to tell somebody and use this as, if you're in this dark place, you're clinging onto this addiction because you feel a lack of love, you feel a lack of purpose, you feel a lack of direction. you feel a lack of ability to handle the weight that you feel. Use talking about your addiction as a way to prove to yourself that you do have people that love you around you.
Totally.
Because you can go to them and say, you can talk to them about it. And if they react negatively, they just showed you who they are.
Yeah.
And they just showed you how much they care about you.
Yeah.
And the chances are the gut, if you trust the gut and you tell the person you feel like you should tell, they're going to love you and support you through that. Yeah. And they're going to.
I mean, I've told the wrong people before. I told a producer once I was struggling with drinking and I didn't know what to do. And he's like, you're not going to make it in the music industry if you don't drink. I know. And that lie kept me out for longer. And then it wasn't until when I got sober that I realized this person had a problem too. And I had to separate myself completely.
Yeah.
But it's tough, man. But I wasn't ready for whatever reason. Cause like, you know, it's so weird. Like, I don't know why the light bulb went off when it did. How many years was your addiction like prominent before you got help? Or before you started to consider yourself in recovery from it?
It's complicated.
Yeah.
For me, I was sitting on that 99% line probably even a few years into marriage.
Yeah.
Which is something that's really scary to admit.
Yeah. No, I bet.
I love my wife more than anything.
Yeah.
And that's like, you have to really deconstruct what's behind the addiction. That's the thing. If you just try and fight the addiction head on, it's an uphill battle that you're going to lose. You have to understand what's underneath.
Totally.
And so all that said,
because the addiction is not the problem.
No,
the thing is the symptom. The problem.
The addiction is the symptom of the problem.
Yes. The problem is in us.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not the thing. That's why some people can drink and not have like put it down.
Yeah, like me.
Some people can watch porn once, you know, fucking month and just walk away, or once a year, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it was basically from 11 or 12, 10 years-ish.
Yeah.
Where, like, I would say about, like, 8-9 years of, like, actual addiction. And then when I started dating my wife, I peeled back. Like, totally. I hit the freaking brakes because I love this woman.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things where, because I didn't understand it fully, there was still a lot of religious pressure and shame and a lot of fuel for the fire still.
Yeah.
There were occasions where I would like fall.
Relapse.
I would stumble. Kinda, yeah. And that was like, again, made me feel guilty. And I felt like even worse because now I'm married. There's all this shit. Cole has been more than supportive and loving and patient and
amazing.
As much as I'm sure I've caused her pain, I owe where I'm at now, well, mostly to her for being somebody that I could turn to, because she was the only one.
Yeah.
So
amazing.
10 years, give or take.
Yeah.
I feel that combined with all of the religious stuff, I feel like my childhood and early adulthood was stolen from me in a way.
Yeah.
And something that I want to add, because we're pretty much at the end here. Some people may ask, why even give it up? Why give the addiction up? Why? Because it's hard, right? We said at the very beginning that drinking this thing, watching this thing, injecting this thing, whatever it is infinitely easier than doing the work to dig up the graveyard and really inspect the stuff that's underneath that you're hiding from. That's a lot of work. It takes a lot of time and it's painful.
Yeah.
And so they might ask why.
Yeah.
For me, and I'm curious what your answer to this, and then we can bounce out. But for me, I've also felt that sense of purpose. And I knew towards the end that I don't even know what it's like to be without this thing. I don't know who I am without this. And I'm determined to figure that out.
Yeah.
And if you look at, you can just look at, I guess, my podcast. I started Enter the Void a year ago. if I didn't quit porn, I would have never been able to keep that going. I would have never, like, literally freeing myself, because nobody saved me. I did the hard work to free myself from this addiction. Doing that has changed my entire life. I am rapidly, I've made more progress in 1 year than I did 10 years prior. As difficult as that is, like, I have a sense of identity now. I have a sense of purpose, a sense of direction. I wake up every morning now. Sometimes I'm tired. It's like, roll over 30 minutes, whatever. But like, I get up every morning and I am actually excited about life.
Yeah.
I'm ready to get shit done. I'm ready to experience life.
Totally.
I'm experiencing it at a greater depth than ever before.
Same.
I have closer relationships with people that I really care about. I can look people in the eyes and not feel as much shame.
Yeah.
So it's like, what do you have to lose?
Yeah.
Just give it up. See what happens. Cause it could change everything.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the deal I made with myself in the beginning, was when I first started to get sober. I was like, if it doesn't work, I can go back to what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But this, what I'm doing does not seem to be working anymore. So it's like, what have you got to lose? And also, like, for me and my experience and every person I've seen walk, you know, like, get sober and start to take accountability for their lives. I get to live life now. I wasn't living life before. I was running from life.
Totally.
And living life is harder. It is, but it's more rewarding at the same time. And it's like, I don't know why life is set up in this weird juxtaposition where, like, all the greatest things come with so much hard work and pain, but that's part of this fucking game that we're all in, whatever this is.
Yeah.
And addiction is the same thing. Like, I took the easy way out, and it eventually just caused me pain. It like, as the end result. Now it's like, if I work harder and I experience some pain in the beginning, the end result is love and beauty. And like, I get to have a full life now where I did not have a full life before. And I've watched people, like, I've watched dudes that were living on the street, fucking homeless, married with kids, job, house. Like, because they gave it up. They got help. They walked this way of life. And yeah, it's crazy. It's wild.
If we can do it, you can do it.
Yes. If I can do it, you can do it. Anybody can do it. This is not like, this is accessible to everybody. You have to want it, I guess. You have to be done, really, truly, like, in your heart, know that, like, this is not the answer. And you gotta try to fucking seek a way out.
And you'll find it.
Yeah. Or it'll find you.
Yeah. Cheers to that.
Yeah, cheers, man.
Thanks for coming on.
Of course. Thanks for having me, man.
That's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
I kicked the camera with one foot last time, so this time...